I do this for my culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me, folks. Tonight, first and foremost, that conversation with the Inspector General. How many of you knew that we even had an Inspector General? Let me just see a show of hands.
Oh.
I didn't. I'm serious, folks. Like, after some time, I was like, oh, my goodness, I don't know what this person does. So I would highly recommend that that you do your due diligence. And if you have some real issues about what's going on in your workplace, or you feel like there's some real issues, contact the Inspector General's office. Again, that number is 443-984-3476, 443-984-3476. All right, folks, we want to switch gears because guess what? Something came out about Squeegee Boys. You know Squeegee Boys, the favorite conversation that people have loved to have. It's like the conversation you love to hate to have. There we go. Squeegee Boys, we got to talk about it because it's been reported, and I saw this, and I asked Alex, my producer, I said, Alex, did you hear about this? Apparently, the governor of this great state of Maryland, Governor Larry Hogan, was in a conversation. He was in a meeting with a group of people, pastors, activists, and many other folks, and they were talking about the Squeegee Boy issue. The governor then came out and had a press conference and, you know, met members of the media and talked about it. And he was told that Squeegee Boys workers, quote unquote, Squeegee Boy workers or Squeegee workers, make $40 or $50 an hour. Yes, this is what he has said. Now, he believes that this larger conversation about Squeegee Boys is a conversation that's like a non-starter, because he says that he doesn't like for people to come into the city and to feel like they're being harassed by Squeegee Boys. Mm-hmm. So this whole conversation about him, you know, Squeegee Boy enterprises and entrepreneurship is a moot point with the governor. It's like, look, people are coming in, they're complaining about being harassed on various corners in downtown Baltimore and throughout the city. But he also made the point that it's hard to get them off these corners if they're making $40 or $50 an hour based on what he was told. Is that true? I want to get your take on this, folks, because if that's the case, then I am putting my 2 weeks in today. And you will no longer hear me on WEAA. $40 or $50 an hour? To wash some windows? Now, you remember, the mayor's office, actually, they have been trying to figure out a way to do this. And this whole conversation is driving me crazy, folks. It's like, either we do something, we don't do something. And by us being in this place of analysis paralysis, you know what that is, folks? Analysis paralysis is when you're overthinking a situation. You're thinking about a situation so much, you're not doing anything. You're just paralyzed in thought. Analysis paralysis. This is where I think that a lot of us are on this issue. It's like, oh, they're enterprises. No, they're nuisances. Oh, they're entrepreneurs. No, they're harassed. They're panhandlers. Analysis paralysis. Something needs to be done. The last conversation that you and I had was the conversation about, you know, whether, you know, if the city government should do something around this issue. But if Squeegee Boys are being paid $40 or $50 an hour, And there has been reports the Baltimore Sun did an investigation and others have started to look into this and said, you know what? That may not necessarily be the right number. Now, according to the Baltimore Sun, they said they talked to some squeegee boys, some squeegee workers, or however you want to frame them. But they talked to some of the young guys, and they said that on a low day, they can earn as little as $15. And then on a high day, on a good day, they can earn as much as $250. Now, is that weekly? Is that daily? We don't know. But now that we possibly, maybe, potentially can have or do have some quantifiable figure on this activity, should we really, really, really figure out a way? Should there be a tax on this? If the governor is correct, based on what he was told by others in the meeting, that it's $40 or $50 an hour, how do we kind of like deal with that? I want you to join me in this conversation. 410-319-8888 is the number. 410-319-8888. My man Sean on my Facebook page has said $40, $50 an hour, man. Chucks. I'm about to go clean some windows. Hey, Sean, make sure you have a bucket and squeegee for me because I'm joining you right after the show, man. $40 or $50 an hour. Is this true? Is this true? You know, the governor said in his comments, this is what he said. I'm going to share it to you exactly. He said, one of the ministers had a program where they were trying to employ some of the squeegee kids. But the problem is some of those squeegee kids make $40 or $50 an hour harassing people on the streets. And it's hard to replace that with a job. It's hard to replace that with a job. Yeah. The mayor, he said this just on Wednesday. He said, I don't know whether that's true or not, but I've heard rumors they're making a lot of money on those corners. Some say $200 a day. Some say $100. It's just a few I've heard. I don't think anybody is making $50 an hour. $100 a day. Let me do the math on that. If you out there one day, you out there 7 days a week, 7 days is $700. That's $700 of tax-free money. $700. Now, if you out there with six other your homeboys, let's do the math on that. Yeah, that could be a problem. That could be a very real problem. I'm not making light of this, but now we're getting into money. And folks, I think it's important that if we get into a conversation about money and this type of activity, there needs to be some regulation. There needs to be some regulation. Tell me if I'm wrong. Let me kick it off. Talking to Tremaine. Tremaine, am I wrong? Should there be some regulation if numbers are being thrown around about this activity, sir?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. Wrong. Yes, ma'am.
Nice to talk to you. Been listening for so long. No, you're not wrong. That's not even feasible, possible, because the light doesn't stay that long that they can make that kind of money an hour, because they never even totally finish a car. So I don't know where they're getting those numbers from. That's impossible.
I mean, are you saying that, Tremaine, because you kind of jealous? Are you hating a little bit?
Oh, no, sir. I'm not hating. I have conversations with them.
Right.
I do HR for my company.
Okay.
And I talk to them. I'm giving out business cards because I ask, how much you make an hour? And most of them no one has ever told me that they made that kind of money.
So that's not true.
That's not true. It's impossible.
Okay. Okay.
It's impossible. Unless they pulling cars over to a lot or something and doing it individually like that, but not at a traffic light. Come on, you know how long a light takes. It's impossible.
So how much
so deep.
Tremaine, how much are the guys telling you that they make?
He say tell me maybe $50 all day, maybe $100 all day, possibly, maybe. And that's like he said to an 8 to 10 hour day.
An 8 to 10 hour day. Maybe $50 to $100. Okay, I can kind of see that. Is that on a good day or is that on a regular day? That's on average?
He said He said that's on a good day.
All right, that's on a good day. Here's the thing, Tremaine. Here's the thing. You HR representative professional. Here's the thing. Regulation. Can we please get some regulation to this? I mean, because I feel like now we're getting into this very, very weird space. We're talking about hours worked. We're talking about dollars earned. We're talking about a location. This is a business. Businesses are regulated. Is that not the case? I mean, what, am I wrong on this? Let's go to AR in Timonium. AR, talk to me. What's your take?
Thank you so much. I enjoy your radio show all the time.
Thank you.
I just wanted to let you know, every time I go downtown, I make sure that I give these children, we keep forgetting, these are children, okay? I make sure that I give them at least $10, $20. And I always say to them, thank you. And once you do that, those kids, those children, they look at you with a smile and they forget about what dragged them into the street to wash the window.
So you give them $10 or $20?
Every time I go there.
Every time you see them. All right, so is it time for us to have some real regulation?
No, because these are children. We should look at the emphasis on a family. What causes these children, instead of being home, playing games, being a child, they're in the street, they're putting themselves in a danger, and they're not learning, and they're being pressured by the adult as well. I see a lot of people, they're like, don't touch my window.
Yeah, I hear you.
Just be nice. $2.
Okay, I hear you. Thank you, AR. Thank you for checking in. I'm gonna get one more call. And I gotta ask this question, folks. Let's go to who haven't I ever had a chance to? Okay, is this Delord out of Baltimore?
Out of Gwen Oak.
Oh, Gwen Oak. Oh, Glord.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Glord.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
Glord.
Yes, sir.
All right, Glord,
yes,
talk to me, sir.
Yeah, I heard that report where they're making $50 an hour, man. And that is hogwash. Hogwash.
Okay.
They'd be lucky if they're making $25, $30 for a whole day being out there. And we know it's illegal to get them off the street. I have made two proposals to another station. We as motorists, we have electric, windshield wipers, and when we go out in the morning, we're supposed to check our tire pressure, make sure the tires are on the car, and the windshield wipers are clean. If people start doing that, and when we go to certain areas, we don't have to give them anything. But this is how you get them off. If the police can actually see us tipping these people, it's almost like the cab. If you put your hand down, you're trying to hack. It's against the law to do that, so they can make against the law for us to give them any money. But if we go ahead and do what we need to do, keep our windshields clean and don't give them any money, send it to an organization somewhere, if they need some money or whatever, go there and get it.
All right.
Because that was set up for the homeless a while back. They say don't give a panhandle no money, send them to an organization.
Hey, Glord, and I appreciate you, man. It's always good to hear from you, sir. Here's my thing, folks. I guess my biggest concern is that the more we have this conversation, the more we are, it's like we're encouraging certain things. And I feel like that may potentially be the backlash, that we're encouraging certain behavior. Here's why I say this, folks. When I was 14 years old, I never thought about being a squeegee boy. Never thought about it. My thing has always been, I was blessed to even get a job. Like, I knew my sister worked at a place, so I was able to work at a place, and then it was like, boom, it was on and popping. Busboy did the whole thing. I mean, I was a janitor, folks. I was a janitor. That's how much, like, I was serious just about working. I feel like if we're kind of having these debates about cost and money and all of this, that we're maybe sending the wrong message. We're sending the wrong message to these young folks that say, like, you know what? This is cool. This is cool. This is what the city needs. I'm here to say it's not cool. What the city needs is young people in the workforce. What the city needs is youth brilliance and intelligence outside of being on the corner. What the city needs is an opportunity for these young people to work in. That's what now. That's what the city needs. The city don't need us to do more squeegee work. I'm sorry. I know you're going. Some of you probably be upset for Raji. That's what they need. No. That's not disempower them. That's not make them weak. There are opportunities. There are ways for young people to make money, to take care of their families, and to do it in a very respectful manner, right? And if we continue to be in this kind of like purgatory about this about this situation, then what's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? These are children. What do you think is going to happen? Let's go back to the line. Let me hear from David out of Owings Mills. David, what's your take on it, sir?
Hi, Faraj. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so I think what Larry Hogan was saying, 40, 50 an hour, I think he knows that's not true. I think anyone who thinks about it for more than a minute or so would probably gather that's not true. I think there's certain corner, like certain intersections where during rush hour, sometimes you might make $40 or $50 in an hour to say that, you know, you're out there for 8 hours a day making 40, 50 an hour. That seems ridiculous, and I frankly don't believe that at all. That said, one thing we were saying, you know, like, are we going to do something about this or not? I would love to see in something like the Kerwin Commission where, you know, one of the tenets is let's provide more vocational training in schools, something along the lines of, like, a paid minimum wage apprenticeship program.
A paid minimum wage, okay.
Yeah, the kids could do, you start, you go to school, something like that, and then after lunch, you know, you can go to your apprenticeship where you're either working on cars or you're doing, you know, obtaining some type of, like, beginner computer science certification or welding or just a marketable trade, something that's going to set you up to make a livable wage once you're out of school.
Okay, there it is. And David, I got to stop you right there, but I like the idea that you said a livable wage once you're out of school. The thing is, I feel like this is creating a different market. Now, that is the hard part. That's going to be the hard part about it. What you're saying, David, is that the Kerwin Commission might be, and it may be. I mean, it could be. But again, are we encouraging young people to be entrepreneurs? Because I still don't see an entrepreneurship model here. I've worked with young people for a long time, folks. I don't necessarily see a business model. What's the business model? You know what I'm saying? And I think that that's the important component of this. The business model just can't simply be standing on a corner and wipe windows. That can't be because the business model has to be much more dynamic than that. The business model also has to include the fact that you're dealing with children. So a lot of that stuff has to happen after 3 o'clock and on the weekends. I don't see the business model yet. Now, if the mayor's office is trying to create a business model for it, this is my response to that. But if we're trying to create a makeshift business model, like on the fly in the midst of us going between lights and having conversations, I don't think that's going to be sustainable. All right, let's go back to the phone line, see what you got to say. Let's go to Al in Woodlawn. Al, what's your take on it, sir?
Peace, Kane.
Peace.
First and foremost, man, $50 an hour is crazy. And I'm going to tell you this. If they were making $50 to $100 an hour, white people going to find a way to make that same money. Same way white people figured out how to make money off us hacking, what they do? Uber, Lyft. We were selling bags of weed and stuff like that. What they do? Dispensaries and things of that nature. So if that money has been made on these street corners like that, I guarantee white people will find a way to have squeegee boxes, something like that, or anything like that, some kind of technology to take that money. So I do not believe that they're making that type of money, and if they it ain't going to last long.
Al, they have already. If that's the case, you know what the revolutionized way of squeegeeing?
Wait a minute.
I'm gonna just throw out this weird business model, Al. It's called a car wash.
Exactly, all right? So that's why I say they're not making that type of money. But my other second point is this. If they really want to find a way for what the youth can do, we can kill two birds in one stone. 311 is having a very big problem. There's a very backlog with a very great big backlog with calls of picking up trash and things in people's backyards.
Boom.
What they easily could do is get these the boys hazmat suits, give them gloves and everything to make sure they're not getting, you know, injured or anything like that, and allow these children, 16 and up, to go pick up some of this trash in the street.
Come on,
and
Al,
what that also do is generate good behavior.
Come on, Al. And guess what it does do? It makes you, it gives a young man, because I know, Al, did you work when you were 14, 15,
yes,
16
sir.
Years old?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
When you came home from a hard day's work as a young boy, right, as a young man
mm-hmm.
at that age, right, you got
yes,
a little
sir.
Money in your pocket, you actually
yes,
got a job.
Mm-hmm.
You can't
mm-hmm.
replace the feeling that you have to say, nah, man, I got to go to work, and you 16 years old.
That's right. It's a great feeling.
It's a great feeling, right? And to do it, to put the cherry on top, say, I help people keep their neighborhoods clean.
Boom. There you go. So let's put it together, put a proposal.
Come on, man. I don't
see
why.
Leader behind it,
yeah.
And we can get it going.
Hey,
all
Al,
right.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for
yes,
checking
sir.
In.
Thank you.
My gosh. This ain't hard. This is not hard. This is really not hard, folks. This is not hard at all. This is not hard, folks. This is just requires us to think outside of the box. I don't want to disempower these young men, these little young brothers. I don't want to take no power away. I don't even want to put them into a narrative of weakness that they either they squeeze in or they bust somebody in the head. That is not true. Because if you grew up like I grew up in Baltimore City, that was not our options. I don't care what socioeconomic background you came from, which neighborhood you grew up in, or anything like that. We do ourselves a disservice when we create this narrative of weakness about the future of black boys. We do ourselves a disservice. Get them off the corners. Get them into some respectful jobs. Get them doing some great work for the great city of Baltimore. And check this out. Watch. Watch. When you start to do that, their whole view of themselves start to change. Their whole view of themselves start to change. Look, folks, I'm going to take my final break. When we come back, more of your calls. And, of course, we're going to be checking in with Woundworks Productions. Stay riding with me. It's For the Culture on WEAA.
I do this for my culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture right here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me this evening, folks. Tonight we're asking the question, is it true that squeegee boys make $40 or $50 an hour? Many of you are saying, no, that's not true. Let me share with you a couple of comments from my Facebook watchers. Cody checked in and said, look, I did a live and my passion for them stems from me having a summer job as a teen. Baltimore has limited funds for youth works. Leave them alone until if ever the city gives them jobs. Cody, I like you a lot. I have to disagree. You don't have to wait for the city to give you a job. If you can go out there on the corner to stand out there for 8-10 hours, you can create a job in your neighborhood. You know how many neighbors would love for you to clean up their trash? You could talk to the community association and say, look, we would be willing to cut some lawns. We'll be willing to do some odd jobs around the neighborhood. You don't have to wait until they give them a job. They can create their own job. You can go to any of some of the big box retailers, some of the businesses, and say, look, I'll sweep your floors. I'll do some things. I just need a little, you know, just help me out. You need the extra help? I'll wash some dishes. That's what we did. That's what we did. We find a means. We used our big, beautiful minds to figure out how we're going to get some money in a legitimate way, in a respectable way. That's it. You don't have to wait for nobody when you're a teenager. Just go out there and just say, look, you mean to tell me nobody, the family members of some of these young people, can't give them opportunities, can't help them to find some employment? Come on. Come on. Let's not create this narrative of weakness and disempowerment. So, Cody, I have to respectfully disagree with you. I can't leave them alone, because if one of them little brothers get hurt in the process, we talk about somebody's trying to shoot them and all that. If they get hurt, then what? Where do we stand? How can we justify that? How can we say, oh, well, people are visibly upset. More importantly, I want us to make sure that we provide the best way for our young men to live. That's all I'm saying. All right, Arlene checked in and said, Faraji, you said the key word, you were blessed to work at 14 years of age. Those children have not been educated on entrepreneurship. That is why there's no business model for squeegee. Okay, I agree. So we give them a business model. They can be educated, because guess what? We're educated. Arlene also says, to take what the caller said one step further, make jobs cleaning up the trash with the 50% unemployed black male youth inclusive of the squeegee enterprises. Come on, folks. It's not hard. This is not hard. I hear you, Arlene, but it's not hard. Juanita checked in and said, Dr. K and Justina went out and interviewed some of the squeegee boys, and one young man told them that, yes, he can make $200, $300 in a day on the weekends tax-free. Come on. I posted about this the last time that there was a topic. Like the governor said, it's going to be difficult to get them interested in a minimum wage job with structure, getting paid in most instances biweekly when they can go out and when they want and get paid today. That's not how America, that's not how life works, though, Juanita. I hear you loud and clear. There's a difficulty factor. But there's always a difficulty factor for anything of value. So that's not how it is. Get young people to stop thinking about quick, fast money. Am I missing something here? We don't have to get them to think about quick, fast money. I need $200, $300. Because that's not real. That's not like, we as adults, we don't make quick, fast money. It doesn't happen that way. And we do a disservice if we create the environment that promotes that. We do our disservice, because they're going to have to, they can't, how long can they squeeze you for? They're going to squeeze you way through high school. Then they got to go to college, and then they really got to figure it out. All right, let's go back to the phone line, see what y'all got to say. Miss Diane from Baltimore, talk to me, Miss Diane. Talk to me. Am I wrong on this? Am I going crazy on this, Miss Diane?
No, you're not, but they do make that kind of money. You know what I would like to see the city do? You know that old car wash right there on North Avenue and McCullough Street?
Yeah.
Fix it up and give it to them. Or lease it out to them.
But why can't we just hire them?
There's
a car wash right there on 25th and Howard Street.
Well, that's true, too. And you know what? Even like some of these, like, what's that, T-Bow Price and them. They had just met with the mayor, like, in December or November, right?
Yeah.
Well, make them do, because when I grew up and when you grew up, the companies that were here in Baltimore gave money to the city to help youth funds and stuff like that.
We understand that, though, Ms. Right, Diane. And you know, youth works. And, right. And guess what? I had not one year in my lifetime in Baltimore City have I ever done youth works. And I got
only
not one year.
It was called something else back in the day, right? I only had it one time. I applied the second time. I didn't get it. But guess what? I did not stop. I went and told my girlfriend lived across the street from me, and she went to Catholic school, and she told me about a position at the post office. They was hiring youth. And I went to school. I got my girlfriend's. I said, we're going to the counselor's office tomorrow. I called him up at home. We was down there in that man's office before he got there. He called his buddy in the county.
Yeah.
We got jobs at the post office, and when them jobs folded up at the post office, I started working at Mercy Hospital in dietary. I took my friends with me again. I didn't leave nobody, because if you hanging with me, you got to have some money. Huh?
That is. Miss Diane, I got to let you go, but you absolutely right. Daryl checked in on my Facebook page, said, yo, Faraji, I'm not going to lie to you. I personally watched one of them count out $300 one day. The amount they get is based on what corner they are on. Come on, man. Okay, so if we regulate, create some regulations and a model around this, okay. I'm not saying they should stop squeezing, but like this way about which we're doing it, how long can it last? Is it good for the city? More importantly, is it good for these young people to learn about entrepreneurship? They would say, oh, well, it's entrepreneurship. It's safety. Some of these young boys got to go to school. Come on, man. You're not doing it. Come on. Let's stop playing for this. All right, let me take one more call real quick. Who we got? You got James out of Baltimore. James, talk to me. What's your take?
Okay, my thought is, okay, if they make it, if they can do their job on the corners and they get for the mayor, pay them, or whomever, then does that mean, okay, now we got 50 people on the corner? Or all over the city trying to do this squeegee thing. But then I want to say to you that I think that you have come up with the best ideas, and you have just said it like it should be said. But also, lastly, well, what about prostitutes? What about prostitutes? They need to make money too. So do we have a place for them to go, or are we going to give them money?
James, I appreciate
you. Simple as that.
Hey, man, you bring up your money. You know what? You bring it up, and I mean, this on the street type of handling of money, I mean, it's big. But folks, I don't think they're making $40 or $50. It may be. Maybe depend, like Daryl, my man Daryl said, it may be based on the corner that you're on. But at the end of the day, this might just smack us in the face. We'd be like, oh no, let them be enterprises. Let them, oh, come on now. Because if then what? There's no regulation. An enterprise, very quickly, entrepreneurship, enterprise, all of those things, businesses, they work within a construct, a regulation. So you can't say that you have a business if it doesn't meet certain criteria, a certain standard. You can't say that. You can't say you run an LLC or sole proprietorship, because there are various criteria that's used to determine that for that entity. What we have right here is not business. It's not entrepreneurship, because there is no regulation. There is no construct. There is no direction. There's no vision. There's just a lot of talk. And I see what Mayor Young is trying to do. I saw what Mayor Peel was trying to do. They're trying to put regulations on a situation. There is no regulations, folks. This is not about our emotional attachment to it. This is not even about the bleeding hearts that we have, because I love my people. I love the young people, too. But I want to see them win. And you can only win when you are in a construct, when you have some sort of control and regulation to help you to grow and cultivate your talent and your skills in a very, very productive way. Otherwise, all of that great talent, all of that great energy that you have, it just goes everywhere. That just goes everywhere. So we want them to be in a structured environment, which is why we talk about schools. We want them to be in a structured environment, which is why we talk about the household. We want them to be in a structured environment, which is why we talk about the community structure. But then when they get out on the street corner, it's like, ooh, they could do whatever they want. It can't work that way, and it's not sustainable, nor is it productive or healthy for them, and certainly not for us in this city. All right, I got to take my final break. When we come back, Woundwork Productions. Stay riding with me. It's For the Culture on WEAA. piece, and welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me. Folks, we're going to end this final conversation tonight with some good people, man. These some good people, man. They've been doing this work for a long time, man. And you know what? I want to say this for real, for real. Like in Baltimore, for real. If you're talking about providing opportunities to young people, Moonworks Production is doing it.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm saying? Real talk. They take you, they clean you up, then they put you on stage and perform. They might take you to a couple places around the country. Perform!
Come on.
But big shout out to all of the mamas.
Yes.
Of Moonworks
yes.
Production.
Yes. Wow.
Mama Kay, Mama Natasha, Mama Rashida.
Yes.
All of the mamas, man, for doing the great work, because as much as people like to talk about, you know, what it's to do with the future of young people in Baltimore City, these sisters decided and had the vision to say we're gonna put them to use and we're going to tell stories and do a lot of big things. So big shout out to all of them for doing this work. But I am joined by some wonderful cast members and of Woundwork Productions, and I want them to each into, you know, introduce themselves, because there's a lot of them. They roll like Wu-Tang up in this thing. Y'all roll deep. All right, so, and of course, they have an upcoming show right now, The Channeling of Mississippi Grant. And this is a dinner theater program, and it's going to be kicking off on February the 9th, which is what?
Sunday.
All right, so let's talk theater.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk theater. Hello, everybody. My name is Stephanie Williams.
My name is Jalen J. Crawford.
I'm Parrish Allison.
And I'm Rachel Smith.
And we are New World Art Ensemble, the adult company of Woundwork Productions. Actually, we have three companies. The adult company is New World Art Ensemble. The teenage company is New Generation Art Ensemble. And then we have a children's company for 5 to 13-year-olds, which is Next Generation. And Woundwork, and for the companies, our mission is to heal and empower youth, their families, and our communities to do a great thing, and it's done through the arts.
That's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm.
And on Sunday, February the 9th, which is this Sunday, we will be doing a performance called The Channeling of Sibby Grant. Sibby Grant was one of the enslaved at 1 West Mount Vernon Place, which we now know as the Walters Art Gallery. Some people may know it as the Hackerman House, but originally it was owned by the Thomas family in 1850. And Sibby Grant was their cook for 22 years. And about 5 years ago, a letter that she wrote to her master at the time, Dr. Thomas, he was arrested for having Confederate sympathies. Mm-hmm. That letter surfaced, and we were sanctioned by the Walters Art Gallery at that time to come and do a live exhibit and be part of the exhibit that they were presenting at the time.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. All right, let me, Parrish, talk to me, man. First thing first, you really do be acting.
I try, man. It's the homework way, man. The homework way.
No, that's my guy, no real talk, man. Personally, like, nah, man, he's like straight Baltimore. And when you see Baltimore, like brothers, like for real, this is the beautiful thing about Baltimore. When you see Baltimore brothers really on stage and exemplifying the skill and talent, it's a beautiful thing. You just be like, dang,
that,
man. Real talk.
That.
Like, it's a beautiful thing. Talk to us about the...
Keep up with the Hawks horses. Unfortunately, all our names weren't named, so... We found a name in a ledger, and we put a character. We like found out what he might have been able to do and what he was doing in the house, and it's just basically regular stables work, making sure when it's time to go, I gotta go get them horses in that carriage ready. I gotta go get it ready. When it's time to feed the hogs, I was keeping all the livestock, and you know, making sure I sweep the floors around the house and stuff like that. Just a little maintenance work and stuff like that. So that's basically who I am in this play. This time. So
how has this play impacted you? Because there is a historical element, like so many plays, but this is a historical element, especially now when, you know, they call them slave narratives,
mm-hmm.
has become, yes. you know, I mean, like we're starting to see more and more of this in Hollywood and yes. on, you know. Does it make you feel a certain type of way? Because more people are saying, man, we need to stop doing some of these things.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Especially when it's half the truth.
Right.
And, and fabricated. Mm-hmm. People putting their own little salt and pepper and stuff, you know. But for me, this experience was just like, when we did the actual show at the Walters Art Gallery, the feeling, the energy of us it was a synergy between us. It's the feeling of the show that I get every time we do it. It's just like, it lets you know that we are actually telling somebody's untold story, something that people don't know. We're standing proxy for them and telling their stories, and we actually took it, and we actually, when we say the channeling, we actually channel these energies.
Channel these people, yeah.
And we be in shows, we be tearing up. I'd be like, I thought this time, but it really happened. And but it's long as we got each other, it's the energy and it's the feeling. It's the feeling of telling somebody's untold story.
Yeah.
Our ancestors had that.
I hear that. I hear that. Yes, sir. I want to make sure we get all of our wonderful cast members in here as we talk about this. Is this like community theater, or is this something bigger from your vantage point, bro?
I would say it's both. I would say it starts in the community. Boomberg is rooted in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But I say Boomberg always has a message that everyone needs to hear. Whenever we do shows, whether it's in schools or whether we do them for the community, it's always something that everybody needs to hear. It's always something that has a message behind it.
Yeah.
Specifically with this show, I know you said a lot of people kind of get a lot of backlash about, you know, doing the slave narrative over and over again, but I think it gets that because we're tired of hearing the same story and over again. We're tired of seeing it kind of a certain narrative being pushed that kind of this was something that was... They're starting to say like they were willing to be there, or it was more almost like it was an exchange, like
choice.
they were workers and anything like no, this was it was very real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of these people, like my character had a name, but some characters weren't named. Like in life, like they were erased from history, mm-hmm. almost to never be seen again. And it's like when you go through all this stuff, and then you kind of have people that are literally the backbone of this country, but then you kind of want them to be erased.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, that's something very real. And that's something that we put into this, well, Stephanie, who actually not only directed, but wrote it and actually
Wait a minute,
found
what?
It.
Yes.
Found the history, everything.
Yes.
Made sure all of that was in the in the show.
I'm a historian in my own right.
Yeah.
So you wrote this.
I wrote did.
It. And directed it.
Yes.
And star in it.
Yes, I did. We all star, but I wrote and directed it.
You wrote and directed it?
Yes.
My goodness. How long did it take you to write this?
I'm going to be very honest. It wasn't a last-minute project. We didn't know about it at the last minute. But I wanted to know as much about her as I could.
Yeah.
And there was nothing but these letters. So I dug and I dug and I went to... I have a friend, God rest his soul, that... graduated from Howard, and I contacted his fiance and said, I need to get some information. And she was an African-American studies major. So she gave me some information on some stuff that she had dug up just about that time period. And then somebody told me, don't go to Wikipedia. That's not true. Don't go to Wikipedia. So then I went to another database and dug it up and paid my $1.99 to see a part. Mm-hmm. You know how you go into the school databases and you have to pay to see, and got a part. Then I sat for like a week and a half and just was like, I don't know where to go and where to start, because I don't want to make her seem like, you know, everybody always wants to say, well, was she in love with the master? Mm-hmm. Or was she doing this with the master? No, there was a respect for this woman, and there was a way that she had to go through the house that kept all of these people together. And for 10 years, she was the only female named in the census.
Wow.
So... I got some information from the Walters Art Gallery, and with that, I just dug my way around. I watched a couple of movies. You know how you go back and start watching Roots and start watching different things just to see. And then I went to the time period in the history of Baltimore. I went to the Maryland Historical Society, went to their website. I called some people just to find out what was going on. And then the lady that was the... she was doing the exhibit at the time, had a really deep conversation with her to find out some information. I think her name is Esther Kaufman at the Walters Art Gallery. And as she started telling me stuff, I would just jot down some things. And then I really had to go sit and just pray and ask God to please give me, let my imagination flow as it can flow to give me the things that I need to make this come into play. Because these people had no names. All that was listed were bodies, ages, and jobs.
Wow.
So that's how we came up with
it. Can we do this?
Yeah. And I want to give a big credit to Mama K and my Rashida and to the cast. Because the cast, I gave words, but the cast gave life to these characters.
Yeah.
Only I was mentioned, Daniel was mentioned, David was mentioned, but all the other females, it just gave history about it being a mostly domestic type of house. Everybody wore black and white.
Wow.
Everybody had their head wrapped. Everybody, it was a certain way that they moved through the house, and the house was architecturally built so that the enslaved could move through the house without being seen or heard, but their service was impeccable.
Wow. Yes. We got a few moments left. I want to give my sister an opportunity to speak as well. What's your role in the play?
My role is I'm one of the domestic workers, and I help take care of the mistress's mother and the children.
Okay. And how has this play impacted you?
This play has opened my eyes a lot. I have a newfound respect for my ancestors. I'm the newest, you know, cast member of Womb Work. So just learning a lot of things that I didn't know before. I took it for granted. It's definitely a blessing to know this much and to know that it's home. It happened where I'm from, like Baltimore, Maryland.
Right.
So it was right downtown, and this is it's really happened.
And can I say one funny thing? I gave Rachel a very challenging line. She has a line that says, we had to feed the children with our own, we had to feed their children with our own breasts.
Mm-hmm.
Coining the phrase, they'll suck you dry. And she delivers that line with such, I mean, so many of them deliver their lines, but that was a hard line to take. Because she was like, well, we was feeding the master's children? And I said, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a reality for us, and that was happening. So all of these pieces that we had to put together, it just, even when I found out, I had to realize that Jalen is from North Carolina. So I went down and did some of that history and what was going up all the way up into
Stephanie,
Pennsylvania.
You're about to become a mama. Mama, Rashida, Mama K, Mama Stephanie.
Mama Stephanie.
No, this is fantastic. Yeah, I'm really excited. All right, so we got a few moments left.
Okay.
How can people get tickets and all of that good stuff?
Okay, so if you want to get tickets, you can visit https://. Sibby Grant Dinner Show .eventbrite.com or simply visit www.wombwork.com and the information will come up about the show. Or you can DM any of us.
Say
DM.
On Instagram, yes.
Jalen J. Crawford. Just DM me.
On and there. simply _ Steph.
Mine's a little difficult. at BL4Y10CK.
Blaylock.
I
hear you.
And what's yours, Rachel?
If you put in Rachel the Michael, RachelTheMichael.
Yes, and if we are, as artists, are being too much, simply go @ WombWorker.
Yep.
Folks, the production is called The Channeling of Miss Sibby Grant. It takes place on February the 9th, 2020 at 3121 Walbrook Avenue, right there in West Baltimore at the Mary the Virgin Episcopal Church.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get more information about it, check out wombwork.com and make sure that you get your tickets and everything, but see this wonderful production. Of course, I had the great honor and privilege to be in the production Megastasis.
Yes. We'll be waiting for you.
Wait for you to come back, brother.
Come on,
this
madam.
Recruit, too.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. We'll talk afterwards. So, yes, come on out and support this community theater. Womb Work has been around has been around for many, many years doing the great work of not just bringing stories to life on the stage, but really changing the lives of so many people that have come through their doors. So, again, big shout out to Mama K, Mama Rashida, Mama Natasha, and all of the family for their continued love. All right, can y'all sing it out?
Hey. In the morning, early in the morning, in the morning, I will rise and praise the Lord. In the morning, early in the morning, in the morning, I will rise and praise the Lord.
Thank you for tuning in to For the Culture here on WEAA.
Thank you, Taraji. We love you. Thank you.